Hey there.
I am so glad that you are here. I'm always so glad that you are here because this is our opportunity to just kind of, you know, hang out together a little bit, get to know each other better. This is our living room, our virtual living room, you and I. So I want you to get your favorite drink, you know, whatever it is that you love, like a hot cappuccino with whipped cream all over it, you know, whatever. Just get it and hang out with us for a little while. Curl up and enjoy. Today we have a great story. We love to present great testimonies and stories in the lives of real people who have had incredible things happen in their life. And today we've got a story like you've really never heard before. It is one of rebellion that was turned toward the redemption story of Jesus Christ. And it's going to be one that you will never forget. So don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss this one. I'm driving down the road, down the freeway, and you know when you're driving somewhere and you kind of tune out where you're going because you've driven this road a million times, and that's what happened to me, and I kind of tuned out. I veered over to the left-hand lane. I was in the car by myself, and I didn't realize that the left-hand lane was the HOV lane. It didn't occur to me until I was in between the two walls, and I'm locked into this lane, and I realized I am in trouble. I did not intend to be in this lane, but now I'm in this lane. How in the world did I get here? Reminds me of the story we're about to hear. A lady that pulled over into a certain lane and she found herself driving down a path in life. You could have never told her in a million years she would be in that lane. We're going to find out what that lane was and how she found an exit off of that path and into the new life that Christ had to offer her. Her name is Janie Burkett Harrison. She is a wonderful woman whose testimony is completely riveting to me. You're going to love it. Would you please help me to welcome her to our program today?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm so glad to see you.
So glad to see you.
I am glad that you were here. The first time we met each other, we were at another television studio together. You were being interviewed and I sat there and listened to your interview. And it wasn't only what you were sharing, it was the way you were sharing it that captivated my attention and everybody that was in the studio that day. Because you are so passionate, as you should be, about what it is that God has done in your life. Yes. And you've written this book as a result of it, Unshackled, A Road to Freedom, because you have been freed.
Yes.
We want to know your testimony. Will you please tell us what your life was like before, and then we'll get to after.
Okay.
Okay.
I would love to tell you. You know, Priscilla, God is so awesome.
Yes.
In Jeremiah 29:11, it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, saith the Lord, for they are good and they are not evil. They are to prosper you and to give you a hope and a future."
Yeah.
But did I really know that as a young girl? Did I really know that God had a plan for me? You know, I think in a way that I really did, because I was raised in a good pastor's home, a wonderful, loving family. Mm-hmm. My dad and my mother pastored in Valley, Oklahoma, Dr. Leland and Jan Birkin. I have two sisters, one that's older than I and one that's younger.
Mm-hmm.
We're a very, very close family. But we had a church of 300 people in a town of 900. So we had a fast-growing church. God was doing great things. My mom and dad were just doing awesome things for the Lord, and the church was great. And
yeah.
And so as a young girl, I just had this sense that God was going to do something in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It was the passion that I had within me. And so, but with all that said, I had so many insecurities. Mm-hmm. And I'm running this part through my life because I want people to understand that there's a foundation of why we do what we do.
Right. You don't just kind of up and find yourself in this. There's underlying foundational issues that cause everything that happens in our story.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a root to why we do what
right.
we do.
Right. So for you, it was insecurity.
Absolutely.
For many women, by the way,
of
it's
course.
Insecurity. Yeah.
We battle with that on the inside of us. Are we good enough? Are we worthy enough? Are we pretty enough? Are we skinny enough? And so... And so I battled with that as a young girl.
Yeah.
I was overweight and I was bullied at school and things. But I loved Jesus. I loved the Lord. But in the midst of all this, my parents began to have marital problems. They had been married for 17 years. And they took a separation from one another. Mm-hmm. There was a talk of divorce. And that just crumbled me. How can my parents get a divorce?
Yeah.
We're in the ministry.
Yeah.
And I want you to know that just because you're in the ministry or just because, you know what I'm talking about, myself or you or anyone that's out there that's doing ministry work, whether it's speaking or whatever kind of ministry it is, that you're more of a target for the enemy because you're doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing the word of God. And so they were a target, and the devil really kind of messed with their marriage, and they took a separation. And the church, instead of standing with us, they were kind of a product of a broken home. Well, they took sides.
Mm.
One side, when people did, they took this side and that side and backbiting and gossiping and running people down. And so I think to myself, if we're Christians, if we love like Christ, why do we do what we do?
Sometimes we're harder on our own than the world is. Sometimes we see somebody that's struggling or in trouble somehow, and we make it harder for them and worse for them than others that are on the outside looking in.
I know.
Yeah.
It's very true.
So you struggled a lot during that season, and what did you find happened in your life as a result of that time in your family's life?
Well, I found that there was starting to become bitterness inside of me, like in anger because of the people in church of what they did.
Okay.
And so after my parents took a separation, they reconciled, the Lord put them back together. They've been married for 36 years or so, but we resigned our church. What really the sense of it was that God had called my family, my dad to the evangelistic field. And so he didn't want to go. We didn't want to get up and leave and go on the evangelistic field. But after all that, the Lord just kind of made it so hard that it's like, okay, God, I'll go.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever you want me to do, right?
Okay.
So we resigned the church and we went on the evangelistic field and we traveled for 5.5 years all around the United States preaching the gospel. It was school during the day and church at night. That was my teenage years. That was my adolescence and my teenage years. We left and went on the evangelistic field when I was 11. And so I couldn't understand why the things that had happened, why they happened. I didn't understand why God would let such bad things happen to good people who served him.
Mm-hmm.
So I got angry and I got bitter and I began to eat to fill my insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as women, we do that. We find something that can feed insecurity within
us. Yeah, and for a lot of people, it's food. I mean, we get emotional, and a big tub of cookies and cream ice cream is the answer. It is the answer. So I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for you, it was food. You began to overindulge on food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And by the time I was 16, I was like 200 pounds.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I was 200 pounds. I hated myself so much. I just wanted to completely get rid of. I just wanted to destroy me because I didn't love me. I didn't love what God created. And I think I know as women, we have to love ourselves for who God made us to be.
Right.
And you
didn't, and you couldn't then.
No.
Okay.
No.
So here you are, 200 pounds. You're overindulging in food. That led to?
I went into drug use. After we went on the evangelistic field and we settled down in Henderson, Texas, when I was 16. Before that, about 2 months before we settled down, I was raped while we were on the evangelistic field.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was raped. And because of that rape, I just hated myself even more. So I dove into a life of drugs. And when we settled down, I really did not know how to live my life. I didn't know what to do. I dropped out of school and all these different things. And I didn't really know who I was.
Did your parents know what was going on with you? When the drugs started, were they aware of that?
Yes and no.
They knew something was going on.
They knew something was wrong.
And how did that happen? Did you just, when you moved to Henderson, did you just meet someone that had it and introduced you to it? Or how did you even begin that relationship with drugs?
We're not just doing a Bible study together. We're on a missionary journey. We're on the road with Paul and Silas and Timothy. We're doing the gospel thing. That's what this is about. And we are entrusted to be the children of the day. Please, by all means, bypass me.
Go for God. Ask him. You pull these words off the page, Lord. You make it fire in my bones. You make me able to say when I get to the end of this journey, what if I had missed that? What if I had missed that? It is time to get back to the stuff of your calling. Today is the day.
Or how did you even begin that relationship with drugs?
Friends.
Friends.
People.
Yeah.
The people you hang out with is who you will become.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that, don't we? Who you associate yourself with will be what kind of habits you pick up.
So in Henderson, Texas, you met a group of people. This is what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you began to use drugs.
My first hit of cocaine was at 17.
17.
17. And I felt over the top. Never felt pretty before in my life until I hit that cocaine.
Mm.
And it just said, whew, it hit all of my insecurities within me.
Mm.
All of the pain and the anger inside of me was gone for the moment. But what happens when that high wears off?
You're back to reality.
It all comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of dove into the life of cocaine, and then it was meth.
And you know, when someone's on meth, you know. Because
yeah.
Your entire look had to change. Did you go from 200 pounds to, did you lose lots of weight when you began the drug use?
Well, you know, back up a little bit. I started the bulimia at 16.
Define bulimia, because I think sometimes it gets mixed in sort of with other eating disorders. And so just for clarity, tell us what your specific ailment was.
Bulimia is where you gorge and you eat a whole lot of food and then you throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you eat and you have this disorder with bulimia, it's really a root of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you feed yourself all this food because at that moment when you're eating, your mind is blank.
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking about the struggles in your mind. You're not thinking
you're
about
just enjoying the
yes,
taste of this whatever
this
that you're putting in
that's
your body.
So good. And you know, that was my strongest addiction. I'm telling you, Priscilla, the strongest addiction I've ever dealt with is food.
You know what? I think a lot of women can relate to that because we
so,
all love to eat. Eating for me, let me just tell you, eating for me is not something I do to sustain life. It is a hobby. I love good food. And I think with any of us, if we're not careful, we can slowly cross the line to where anything that is really just supposed to be a blessing in our life becomes this bondage
yes.
to us, and we're not able to live free, even when it's something that we're meant to enjoy, like food, for example.
Yes.
So here you are, you're bulimic, so you begin to lose weight. That combined with the drug addiction probably had that effect on you, right? Did you lose too much weight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that.
I got down very, very, very small with the drug addiction. By the time there's so much in between,
yeah.
but basically I got down to like 100 pounds within the drug addiction.
Really?
Because see, I started out of cocaine, but then I became a meth addict.
Mm.
And then I was a heroin addict. And then pills. You name it, I've done it. I put it in my body.
Mm.
And it all was to mask the insecurities that was
mm-hmm.
within me.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it goes from the drug world, then it goes into the strip clubs and the sugar daddy. And running the high life. And then you can't, you have to support your habits. So then you start selling drugs.
So you were selling
yeah.
drugs. Yeah. To support the habit.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And all this time, I'm very curious to know, and I know we should have your parents sitting on this couch.
Yes,
I
we
would
should.
Love to talk to them because there is, you know, someone watching this right now and they're in your shoes,
mm-hmm.
but there is someone watching this right now and they're in the shoes of a mama or a daddy.
Yeah.
That loves their baby and they do not know how to respond to the child's choices that they are making to
right.
Take drugs or to sell drugs or to live in a way that is just so outside of the realm of the way they raise this kid.
Yes.
Could you please tell us what your parents' response was to you during this time that, because you're no longer living under their roof, right? Are you just living with friends or
I'm
just?
Well, I have a sugar daddy who takes care of me.
Okay, so you're just kind of with him.
Mm-hmm.
And is he like a pimp in your life?
No.
He's just taking care of you.
Just taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wealthy guy and he's just taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's giving me cars and furs and diamonds and taking me out whining and dining me and giving me everything and never letting me fall.
Mm-hmm.
Really never letting me hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So you could look at me and say,
She's got it all together.
She's not an addict.
And your parents know all of this, that they're mm-hmm. watching all that. Are you still in Henderson, Texas with them?
I'm
kind
all
of
over.
All over the place.
What and is Tyler their and Dallas and
what
things.
Is their response?
They prayed. Priscilla, they prayed. Let me tell you something. Prayer changes things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for the prayers of my family, I would not be here today. Mm. My dad called me 50 times a day. I'm not kidding. He would call me, not maybe 50, but you,
I get it.
The urgency, Janie, yes. Come home. We love you. Mm. Please, please stop this. And you know, Priscilla, I never felt the love of my dad or really my mom. Because of the ministry, because they were so busy doing things for God. Not that they didn't love me.
Right.
I know
they were
that
just
they loved
busy.
Me. They were busy. Mm-hmm. We were doing all these great things for God, but yet I was suffering within me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never felt the love of my dad. And so when my dad was calling me all the time and, Janie, come home. We love you. Please stop. We know that you're in this and we don't know how to help you. And But Jesus loves you. Please give your life over to God. And I'm like, I don't want nothing to do with God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done with God. Mm-hmm. What has God ever done for me?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, but he loves you. And so they keep praying and their scriptures is what keep them sane. And my mom was more of a tough mother. She was like, Leland, stop calling her. Let her fall.
Yeah, yeah.
Let her hit rock bottom.
Let her do what she's going to do.
Yeah. Let's pray for her, and because we can't do nothing. She's breaking your heart over and over again. And my mom and dad, and my dad would say, but I can't. I got to go after. And, you know, that's what God does for us.
Yeah, he does.
He does that, Priscilla. Yeah. He says, I love you enough to chase after you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was your mom's, you know, there's not one way that was right or wrong. It was your mom's way of loving you, too,
yes.
to say, you know what? I've got to stand back. I've got to stay on my knees before the Father about my daughter. But I've got to allow the Holy Spirit to be the Holy
yes.
Spirit in her life
yes.
and to let her go through whatever she's going to. So your parents were nearby, even
mm-hmm.
though they were far, they were nearby. They stood by your side. You always knew that they loved you.
Yes. And I would come home for a day or two, clean up. And
you would.
Yes. And then split. Or I would come home and I would be going through withdrawals and I would lay there and they would put on Christian music and my mom and my dad would say, don't you just want to give it up and let Jesus heal you? And I'd say, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. Rock back and forth. I'm not ready yet.
So
going
their
through
door
withdrawals.
Was always open.
Yes.
That's very, very interesting because do you think that that's always the wisest thing to do? If you have someone that you know might steal from you to support their habit or that your safety might be in jeopardy because your child is involved with that kind of person or in that kind of lifestyle, do you think that having the door always open as a parent is always the responsible thing to do?
I think so. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because if my parents would have completely shut me out, I may not be here today.
Mm.
They locked their doors. They locked their safe. I stole from them. I stole checks. I stole rings. I stole anything I could to get my fixer or however you want to call it. And I'm ashamed of that.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God they've forgiven me.
Mm-hmm.
But they let me
mm-hmm.
in anyway.
Yeah.
And they loved me in spite of my rebellion.
Yeah.
Because it was the love that they showed me that brought me back.
Mm.
It was the love of God. That's what saves us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the love of God.
Yeah. What a picture of the love and grace and mercy of Christ.
Yeah.
On his children, that when we even are running in the opposite direction, still pursues.
Still
the door is always open, right?
Yeah.
And so tell us what happened after these years of drug use, selling drugs, a lifestyle that was just kind of out there. What happened?
Okay. My mother began to pray that I would get arrested.
I love your mother. I need to talk to your mother. That's my kind of woman right there.
I know it. You know, my dad was come. My mom was like, Get her. You know,
yeah. uh-huh.
She wanted to turn me in, but my dad wouldn't let her. And so she just said, God, save her soul, save her, whatever it takes. Keep my baby alive and in her right mind until she comes to know you.
Mm-hmm.
But save her by letting her get arrested. So I got arrested twice.
Mm-hmm.
I was in and out of jail. I was running dope and selling dope with the cartel.
Were you arrested for mm-hmm. selling drugs? Okay.
Mm-hmm. First, I had the first time I was arrested was possession, and then the second time was forgery, and then the third time that I was arrested, I actually turned myself in. My bond was $1.5 million bond.
Mm. So you wasn't getting out.
Mm-mm. And I was one of those, if you're going to do it, you do it all.
Do it all. Do it
if
right.
If you're going to be all out, be all out.
Now,
so how old were you? 21.
You're 21. And arrested for the third time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Arrested for the third time. Had 17 different warrants out for my arrest. 17 and $1.5 million bond, like I just said. But that $1.5 million bond was only on 5 charges.
Oh,
organized crime, manufacturing delivery, possession of a controlled substance, 2 possession charges and a forgery charge.
Okay.
$1.5 million. So the other ones were just pending.
Mm.
So they're
and
all
in the middle of all this. Your parents are still praying.
They're still praying.
Are they in? Are they around? Are they in the court case? You know, when you were in the court or anything like that, was their presence seen? Did you see them?
Of course.
Yeah.
They were not going to leave me. They're going to be there with me through the whole time.
Your siblings, to your sisters,
of course.
Yeah.
All of them. We're very, very close family. And so, actually, what happened was the police department contacted my dad because they knew that he was a minister, and they said, "We're going to give you." We're going to give you 30 days to turn Janie in. If you don't turn her in, we're going to come hunt her down like a dog. And so they pleaded with me. I was going to flee the country. I was running. I had everything, passport. I had everything ready to flee the country.
And you had the money to do that because of the sugar daddy,
yes.
Because of the man that's kind of, okay.
Was he
going to go with you? You were going to go together?
Yes.
Okay.
We were going to go together. And as I was leaving, as I was getting ready to leave, my mother called me. And my mother didn't call me much. And when she called me and she said, "Janie, please turn yourself in. Please. I don't want them to kill you. Please." Mm. And I said, for that moment, God broke me for that moment. And then so I said, "Okay, Mom, I'll come home." And just before that, I was sitting in my Lexus, in my car, underneath my dealer's tree. It was at his house under this big, big tree. And I remember just doing a big, big shot of dope. And as I was sitting there, I looked up and I said, "God, if you're real, help me to live again. Because I'm so lost. I'm only existing. I'm not living." 2 weeks later, I found out that I had all those warrants out for my arrest. So my mother convinced me to turn myself in, and I turned myself in on this $1.5 million bond in 2006, and they got all the charges dropped down to 2 because they could not convict me on all of them. They could convict me on the 2, which I was still doing undercover cop methamphetamines. And so they asked for 45 years my first time down. No probation, no nothing, 45 flat.
Yep.
And 30 years on the first degree felony and 15 years on the second degree felony. They wanted me to talk, but I would not talk. I would go to prison before I would rat, because you just don't do that in the drug life. You just don't.
Because you would have been killed probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew that. So I just shut my mouth. And so when they asked for the judge, she considered it, but she was lenient on me, and she gave me a 5-year prison sentence on the second degree felony, and she gave me a 10-year adjudicated probation carrying a 30-year prison sentence in the women's state prison on the first degree felony.
Okay, which means what? Speak that in language we can understand.
Okay.
What did that mean and translate to as to what you had to serve?
Translation, 5 years, I was going to be in prison for 5 years unless I made parole.
Okay,
for the second degree felony. But on the first degree felony, she gave me a 10-year probation adjudicated, meaning that if I get out of prison and I mess up and I violate my probation in any kind of way, I can spend 30 years of my life in prison, plus she can add another 10 onto it for violation.
Okay. So you go to prison. You are 22 years old or so.
22.
You go to prison for that 5-year sentence, and you end up serving how much of that?
18 months.
So you're in prison for 18 months. And during that time in prison, what happened?
I found God. Okay.
He found you.
Okay, he found me, right?
He found you,
He found me.
Okay.
He put me in a place where I would listen.
Yes.
But let me tell you something. There's this thing called jailhouse religion.
When all of the stuff of life is back at your disposal, and you're not just kind of in a position where you're tunnel visioned on him, then what happened after 18 months? You got out of that position. You've met Jesus in prison. You've got this relationship with him. You get out of prison after 18 months, and
I fall right back into my old addictions. Right back. Within 2 weeks in prison, I'm like, "Lord, if you release me from prison, I'll serve you. If you do this for me, I'll do this for you." So he says, "Okay, Janie."
We've all made deals like that with God before, haven't we? You make these deals and we say, "Lord, I'm going to do this if you do this." And then most of the time, we can't keep our side of the bargain.
I didn't really know what to do. I had tried to work on my eating disorder in prison because they sent me to the prison for the mentally insane in Rust, Texas. And I spent time in there trying to deal with the eating disorder and all that. But I never really dealt with it. I just kind of walked through it, kind of fake it to make it type deal. And so I got out in 2 weeks. I was right back. I couldn't do drugs anymore because I was on probation and parole and eating and all that. And I had to go do drug tests every week, and the judge ordered me to go into inpatient treatment, but nobody would take me because my eating disorder was so bad. I was 90 pounds when I was released from prison, but I was ordered to go there, but they wouldn't take me. So then I was ordered to go to inpatient treatment and outpatient treatment and eating disorder doctors and rehab.
Tons
and
of stuff.
Tons of stuff.
So what happened?
I failed my drug test.
So you have a drug test, and the judge has already told you, if you don't keep up your side of the bargain, you are going back to prison for a very long time.
Yes.
So they give you a drug test, you fail the test, and?
And I was given a 40-year prison sentence for breaking my probation.
You are in your early 20s,
yeah.
And you're being sentenced to prison for 4 years.
For 40 years. Right before I decided to get high, my parents wanted me to go to Teen Challenge. And I had been considering it, but not really considering it. And the judge signed off for me to go to Teen Challenge. Everything had been transferred, and I was going to go. But instead of going, I got high, and then I was given this 40-year prison sentence. Oh, my gosh. Because of my choices, I was given a life sentence, basically. I was so broken. You know, the judge, she looked at me and she said, "Ms. Birkin, I know about all of your addictions and all the things that you've walked through." She said, "But that gives you no excuse for what you did. So I'm going to confine you to the Women's State Prison for 40 years of your life."
How do you feel when you're standing in a courtroom and you hear that? Not 5 years, not six, not 10, not 2 years. When you hear 40 years, when you think, "I'm going to be 65 years old before I get out of here." What can you describe and put into words the sense that falls over you, the feeling that falls over you when you heard the judge say that?
My life is over. I have nothing left. Nothing. Everything that I ever wanted. Every dream that I ever wanted to do. I wanted to be a nurse practitioner. I wanted to help people, and everything was gone. Because of my choices. Fear, anxiety. Is this really going to happen? Is this really reality? Have I really got myself into this much mess that there's no getting out of it?
The question on the floor is, what do you do when you're in a place where you feel like your life is over? We're going to talk more about that. This woman right here has a testimony and a life that exemplifies what it means to come from the bottom by the grace of God back on top in your life. And obviously, because she's sitting right here on this couch, she's not serving that 40-year sentence. And we're going to talk about why and how her story has ended up the way it is. And so, listen, this is just part one of the conversation. We've got part two. So we want you to stay tuned and join us for that. Would you please help me to thank this woman for being here today? So glad that you are here. I'm always so glad that you are here because this is our opportunity to just kind of, you know, hang out together a little bit, get to know each other better. This is our living room, our virtual living room, you and I. So I want you to get your favorite drink, you know, whatever it is that you love, like a hot cappuccino with whipped cream all over it, you know, whatever. Just get it and hang out with us for a little while. Curl up and enjoy. Today we have a great story. We love to present great testimonies and stories in the lives of real people who have had had incredible things happen in their life. And today we've got a story like you've really never heard before. It is one of rebellion that was turned toward the redemption story of Jesus Christ. And it's going to be one that you will never forget. So don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss this one. Hey! Doing very, very well. I'm so glad that you are joining me. You need to know that this is part two of a conversation we've already been having with an amazing woman named Janie. I love her story so much. And more than that, I love her passion because she is just for real about sharing what it is that God has done in her life. And so if you have not seen part one yet, listen, don't watch part two until you see part one, because it is an amazing foundation for what we're about to talk about now. But her story is really riveting, and she's going to share more of it with us today. So would you please just help me to welcome Miss Janie back to our program today?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Janie.
You're looking mighty cute.
Thank you so much.
Have I already told you that I love the pink stripe right here,
girl?
Yes, yes, it's your signature.
It is.
Whenever I see you, it's either pink or it's purple or it's just a different color. It's just as unique as your story is.
I love it, though, because I think that you should be you and you should have uniqueness. Everybody should have something about them that's a trademark.
Yes.
And so
everybody can't pull that off, honey. You are pulling it off quite well.
Thank you.
Okay, when we finished part one of our conversation, we were at this, probably the bottom point of your story, where you're standing in front of a judge in a courtroom, and for a myriad of reasons, you are given a 40-year, you're 24 or whatever,
24.
And you're given a 40-year sentence in prison.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us what unfolded in your story after that.
So I was given this 40-year prison sentence because of breaking my probation and not really doing what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. You fail this drug test. They tell you in advance, you're going to be in trouble if you fail this test, and you do.
But see, the thing is that my life hadn't completely changed. I had only been locked up in prison.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I hadn't been changed.
Right. You just had been put in a different location where you didn't have access to those things, but you hadn't changed.
Right. We have to be transformed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely transformed. Mm-hmm. We can have a mind change, but we have to have a heart change to really stick with it.
Mm.
My mind says, I can do it, but if my heart
is
not in it,
it
won't last.
Yeah. Yep.
So with that being said, I was given this 40-year prison sentence, and my life was over. Everything that I had ever wanted.
Gosh, you were so young.
Yeah. Oh. To me, it was a death sentence. Mm-hmm. The bulimia that I struggled with was so out of control, I could only keep down baby food and applesauce and a bottle of Jack Daniel's liquor a day before I got this sentence. Mm. So I was a full-blown alcoholic, a full-blown drug addict, full-blown with anorexia and bulimia, and now I'm given this sentence. What life do I have left to live for?
What did your parents say to you that day? You get this sentence. What did your mom say? What did your dad say to you?
Well, they were all in the courtroom, my mom and my dad and my sisters. And as I was walking out in handcuffs, shackled, completely shackled, tears pouring down my face, they looked at me and they said, "Do not give up. We will pray. God will do a miracle. Mm-hmm. We will believe." My mom stood up in this courtroom that day and she screamed, "No!" They shut the courtroom down after my sentence. And as I was walking out, like I said, they said that, and I just said, okay. Went back to my cell completely, I fell out, I fainted. Mm. When some of my friends in jail asked me what happened, I just completely fainted, and I said, I got 40 years, and when I woke up, I was angry, and I was bitter, and I was mad. Why do you have to do this, God, why? And I blame God for all of my insecurities, for all that had happened to you. I mean, it was God's fault. No, it's not God's fault. Mm-hmm. It's the enemy that blinds us. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
And your own choices.
Yes. The enemy encourages us to do the wrong, but God encourages us to do the right.
Right.
And so I was mad at God, and I began to get more angry and bitter and let's fight. I'd begin to fight because I was a fighter back in the day. Just add more time to my sentence. I don't care. There have been.
So you're fighting other inmates, you mean?
Yeah, I'm fighting other people and I'm just
hateful. Because you're with these other people, but you've got to feel the loneliest you've ever felt.
Oh, you have no idea unless you've been there. How lonely it is to know that your life is basically over. Mm-hmm. It's not because good things can happen in prison. God can meet you mm-hmm. there. But for me, it was like a death sentence. Mm-hmm. And so this lady had been coming to the jail, this African-American lady, and she's wonderful. She had been ministering to me before I got the sentence, talking to me about the Lord. She come to see me that day after I got the sentence, but I wouldn't listen to her. She came back a couple weeks. And she said, Janie, she said, I come to tell you that God spoke to me to come and speak to you, to tell you that it's not over until he says it's over, for he has the final say in your life. Mm. And I was like, oh my God. I said, you think maybe he has a plan for me? She said, yeah, I think he does. And that scripture, Jeremiah 29 and 11, became so real to me at that moment. Maybe God does have a plan for me. Maybe God does have a plan for me. And so I begin to go back and I begin to read my Bible. I begin to pray. God began to send Christian women into my life, especially this one girl. She had a life sentence at 24. She got a life sentence at 24, but she was 28 when I met her, and she glowed with the love of God. She had a life sentence, and she glowed with Jesus. And I said, I want what you have. And she said, it's Jesus. And I said, but I'm not ready. She said, well, he'll be there when you're ready. She poured Jesus into me, even though I wasn't really ready to serve God. Even
why weren't you ready? What do you feel like was keeping you from being ready
for
a relationship with Jesus?
I don't know. Sure. I was scared of myself.
Yeah.
What does a relationship with God look like? Mm-hmm. To me, it was all bad. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen the true fulfillment of God.
A true relationship with God.
Yeah. Even though my parents had a wonderful relationship with God, I never had a relationship. I had religion.
Yeah. Right.
The difference.
Rules, regulations, a to-do list, everything that you've got to carry out to be acceptable to God, as opposed to just acceptance of his gift.
Yes.
And then a relationship with him.
It's a gift. It's a relationship.
And so
she began to pour in me. But see, it was God was chiseling at my heart. My heart was so hard. Mm. It was so stony that God was chiseling at it piece by piece, piece by piece.
Yeah.
And so it was time for me to serve out my 40-year sentence, so I was transferred back to the Women's State Prison. And as a matter of fact, I was supposed to get 3.5 more years because I violated parole. Mm-hmm. But before my parole hearing at 8 o'clock that morning, at 4 o'clock four hours before my hearing, I was moved out of Smith County to prison. My name was called just out of the blue. Mm-hmm. It was a total God thing because I wasn't supposed to go nowhere till after my parole sentence.
Okay.
So if I would have gotten 3.5 years more on parole, I would not have been able to get my sentence overturned. It's miraculous.
Okay, so, got it. So before you're got these 3 years that are added on, tacked on, you're moved to another facility.
Yes.
And then in that facility, what happens? Because you just mentioned it being overturned. What happened?
Okay, yeah. When I got back to prison, I realized, okay, so this is it. I saw all the bars and the gray suits and the white suits, which is the guards and the prisoners. And I said, okay, God, I'm ready.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
And it was in that prison cell in Gatesville or wherever I was at, I forget, that I said, okay, God, here I am. I give my life to you now. If you can take this broken vessel and make something out of it, then I give my life to you. Mm-hmm. Because I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I said, Lord, if it be thy will, would you please overturn this sentence? And send me to the Teen Challenge program so that I can become the woman that you've called me to be. Mm-hmm. But if not, then give me peace and love to accept that this is where I will spend most of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I said, here it is, Lord. And so at that moment, I released my will and I picked up his. And that's what we have to do.
Just let go.
Yeah.
I surrender.
It was like, I surrender, God. Yep. Here I am.
Yep.
And so back at home, my parents went to 17 different attorneys to find out if my sentence could be overturned. Hmm. 17 no's. Nobody said, everyone said, it's impossible. You cannot get the sentence overturned. The judge that's on the bench, she's been there for 30 years. She's not going anywhere. One of the highest powered attorneys in our area. He said, I haven't seen of a sentence like this overturned in 55 years. Hmm. He said, so it's impossible. Go home, pray about it, and let it go. And my parents said, we will not do that. Hmm. We will continue to believe and we'll continue to pray.
There is always an opinion on what love is, right? Everybody has an opinion on what love is.
Hey, I'm Kelly Minter, and I want to invite you to join me as we dive into studying the letters of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John.
That kind of love, he says we are to lay our lives down for others just like Jesus has laid down his life for us. We're to love that way, and that way takes love to an entirely different sphere, and that love is wholly impossible apart from Jesus Christ. Obedience always, always, always leads us in the direction of truth. John is saying, I'm proclaiming, I'm telling you all of this about Jesus so that you don't have to be alone anymore and you can be welcomed in to the fellowship, and not just any fellowship, not just any team, but the one that is based on the shared life of Jesus.
I was challenged by God's truths as I wrote this study, and I hope you'll be challenged as well.
Because when we say obedience doesn't matter and God's ways don't matter, we're literally robbing people of their most significant expression of love for God, which is obedience.
I don't know that there are any more beautiful words in all of Scripture than the teacher is here and is asking for you. This is the book of love. And in this book, John actually tells us what love is.
One of the highest powered attorneys in our area. He said, I haven't seen of a sentence like this overturned in 55 years. Hmm. He said, so it's impossible. Go home, pray about it, and let it go. And my parents said, we will not do that. Hmm. We will continue to believe and we'll continue to pray. So the attorney that was my previous attorney, he finally called my parents, or somehow they got in contact. This was in after the Christmas holidays, in the end of January.
How long had you been in prison by that time?
About 5 weeks.
Okay, so you've been there 5 weeks.
About 5 weeks. And he says, you know what, Leland, I haven't been able to eat or sleep or nothing since the sentence. He said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the case up pro bono, and we're going to petition this new, let me back up and say, the judge who sentenced me, she resigned the bench.
Okay. So there is a new judge.
There is a new judge.
There's a new judge. And then your old lawyer calls your dad one night and says, I have not been able to sleep since Janie got that 40-year sentence. So I'm just going to, for free, I'm just going to take this back up and just see what happens.
Yep. That's what happened.
So the lawyer's having this stirring in his heart at the exact same time that the judge is resigning the bench and a new judge is taking.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
That's right.
We're following with you.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay, good. Okay. So he says, we're going to petition this new judge for a new trial and we'll just pray about it and see what happens.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. They petitioned the new judge for a new trial. I got a letter from my mom in prison and it says, yay, the new judge is going to hear your case. Mm-hmm. You got a new judge and a new case within 6 weeks of the day that I was sentenced. That's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. It's like, man, God, you really do love me. And so on January the 30th, 2009, I was bench warranted back from prison to face this new judge. And it was just me and my parents and the lawyers and the judge, just a little small hearing. They brought me in. I was 84 pounds when I stood in front of her. You could see every bone in my body from the bulimia and the anorexia. And we petitioned her that she would overturn the sentence and she would send me to the Teen Challenge program so that I can become the woman that we know that I can be with God's grace. But if not, to give me a 5-year prison sentence in the women's state prison, but in a medical facility so that I can get the help that I need and not die in prison. And so I apologized. I made amends for all that I had done. I asked forgiveness. I reconciled. I said, I'm sorry for all of the things that I did against the courts and against the city and against God of most. So she went back to make her decision. And as she was making her decision, I had peace because I knew that no matter what, I was in the hand of God. He was going to do in me.
Right.
What he wanted, what he sees fit. She came out and she said, Miss Burkett, this has been a very hard case. And I want to say that this is the very first time she had ever been on the bench. She'd only been there for like 2 weeks serving as a judge. So she took a giant leap with putting faith in me that I would do the right thing. And so that's what God does with us, I think. He says, I'm going to put faith in you that you're going to do the right. God saw more in me than I saw in myself.
And so what did she say?
She said, Janie, she said, I could give you a 60-year sentence and probate it. Because what you have done is unacceptable with this court. She said, however, that would not be merciful, nor would it be compassionate. She said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to confine you to the women's state prison for 10 years with a $10,000 fine. And I just went, okay. I accept it. And she said, however, I'm going to probate that sentence, that you go to the Teen Challenge program, you complete the program, and you make something of yourself, Miss Burkett.
Unbelievable.
Totally. Totally. The day that I saw God's hand, that I saw his face, was that day. He did not have to set me free.
Right, right.
You know how many people are locked up in prison, but he chose to set me free because he knew that I was truly changed. It's not a dramatic change. It's process.
Yeah.
It's progress.
Tell us a little bit about, some people have never heard of Teen Challenge. Okay. What is it?
Teen Challenge is a 13-month faith-based recovery program that helps men and women overcome life-controlling issues like drugs and alcohol. It was founded back in the streets of New York with David Wilkerson and Nikki Cruz, The Cross and the Switchblade. Phenomenal program. Changes so many people's lives. I mean, when I went there, they did not know how to treat me because I could barely walk. When I went in, I couldn't do anything. And so they came up with an eating pattern to feed me 1 ounce of food for months. It was 1 ounce every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I had accountability partner everywhere that I went for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They made my plates. They ate with me 1 ounce of food. They had to train me how to eat all over again. Even though if I could get skinny, the skinnier I could get, the more I would love myself, but the more I just hated myself. And so when I went in Teen Challenge, God said, I'm just going to remake you, Janie.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put all those dead bones and I'm going to take it and I'm going to make it live again, like in Isaiah. And the Lord just began to breathe life into me. But I really wasn't completely sold out when I went to Teen Challenge. It took me a couple of months. I kind of fought that rebellion. Even though God had done this, I still kind of fought it.
You're a stubborn one.
I'm stubborn. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. But that's good, though, because now he uses it for him.
Yeah, we're all hard-headed. We're all pretty hard-headed. We get it. Yeah.
It's like I'm just hard-headed.
Yes.
And so even in the first 2 or 3 months, I didn't want to change. Because I was having to learn how to eat all over again and learn how to love myself and gain weight. With every pound I gained, I cried. Yes.
Because you were so used to, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you can be in a horribly unhealthy situation, but if you grow comfortable there, you can get to a place in your life where you almost prefer to be in ill health. And be comfortable.
Yes.
Then be in a place that's healthy, but that feels a little bit strange and uncomfortable to you because you can get used to bondage and comfortable.
Yeah, Absolutely. And so God's saying, I'm breaking all that off of you. Mm-hmm. I'm breaking those chains. And you're like, I don't want those chains to be broke. Mm-hmm. I do. And God says, I'm breaking it.
Yeah.
I'm breaking it. Yeah. Just let me break it. And so he starts to dig all that hatred and that bitterness and that anger. And he starts to pull it all out. And it hurts. And it's painful. But it's good. It's good. It's good. And so when he pulls that out, he starts putting love and peace and goodness and kindness and gentleness. And he's filling you full of his love. And his love is what transforms your life. It's like you go in a caterpillar and you come out a butterfly.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful for Christ, a masterpiece. And so in my fifth month, I got in the prayer closet because that's the only place I could be alone because I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself. I couldn't go anywhere by myself because I had to have this accountability partner so that I wouldn't throw up, so that I was learning to gain weight. I mean, I was sick. Mm. So I got in there and I said, God, I'm not leaving until you give me new eyes. Please, Lord, let me see myself the way you see me. Please. So he says, Janie, go on a mirror fast. 3 days. Do not look in the mirror at all.
And so, a mirror fast.
A mirror.
I think a lot of us need a mirror fast.
Yeah.
Do not look in the mirror. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't look in the mirror. Because see, in the life of drugs, the life of sex and all the stuff that I was in and the men and the money, it's all about glitz and glamour.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about what's on the outside.
Yeah.
And God says, what's on the inside of you? So for 3 days, I did not look in the mirror. I had to learn to trust other women. Is there anything in my teeth? How does my hair look? Mm-hmm. You know, but I couldn't put on any makeup because I couldn't see. I mean, I was totally plain. Plain Jane. And so for 3 days I did that. And as I would, when I would want to look in the mirror, I prayed and I would pray in the Holy Ghost. I would pray that God would do something in my life. And so on the third day I began to look and he said, nope, you're not ready. So he says, I want you to go 7 days. So for 7 days, I did not look in the mirror at all. I focused on what was on the inside of me. And on that seventh day, when I looked in the mirror, I had brand new eyes. Everything was different about me. That's where I began to get healed. That's where I began to gain weight. That's where I began to love myself.
He let you see yourself the way he sees
you?
Yes.
Like totally through the eyes of God. The hair was good and the eyes and everything about me was perfect. And you know, through that experience, the Lord gave a song to my sister called Give Me New Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They have their album called How Do I Know by Jason and Rebecca Ketchum about giving new eyes. Allowing us to see through the eyes,
see
of,
through
God.
The eyes of God. Yeah.
Wonderful album. Anyhow, so I got these new eyes and I began to get well and I began to just, the love of God began to flow through
And
me.
So Teen Challenge really began to do its work at that fifth month mark where
you've got
the eyes of God to look at yourself differently, to see yourself differently. And so you finished the 13-year program?
Mm-hmm. Finished the
13-month program. Yep.
I graduated on March the 2nd, 2010 at 135 pounds.
Woo.
So I had...
So from 84 pounds to 130, that's a lot of weight.
I gained like 65 pounds.
Yeah. Which is awesome. Normally we wouldn't celebrate that, but that's amazing.
I know.
We're glad.
I know. And you know, I teach women that you should love yourself no matter what. But if you want to work out and do what you want to do to help yourself look better, go for it.
Because
I have a workout routine. I take care of myself instead of diving into the eating disorder and things. I bury myself into God, into fitness and health and beauty and love.
Well, listen, you look amazing.
You know?
Doesn't
thank you.
You look really beautiful. You
thank
look
you.
Healthy. You look well. You look vibrant. You look in shape.
Thank you.
And so that's amazing. And so listen, it's occurring to me as you're talking, when you keep yelling out these years, you're saying things like 2009, 2010, and that's like yesterday. You know what I mean? It's not like this happened some decades ago.
Yeah.
This is really like fresh in your life. And so in the past 5 years, what has the Lord done in your ministry? I know now you've decided that you're not just going to have this transformation and just go, you know, live behind a picket fence somewhere and act like nothing happened. Mm-mm. What are you doing now?
I'm speaking. I'm telling what God's done in my life because I have a passion. I have a drive.
We cannot tell. We cannot tell that you have a passion yet. We wish you had more passion.
And you know, sometimes I think maybe I have too much passion.
Are you kidding me? But I'd have passion too if I had a 40-year sentence that I did not have to serve. That calls for passion, my friend.
Yes.
So good for you. What are you doing with all that passion?
We are building a home for women called Janie's House of Hope. Mm. And it's going to be for those women that are come out of drug addiction or that maybe are wanting to come out of drug addiction and alcoholism, prostitution, any kind of addiction that they might have or that they want to get free. And maybe if they just want to get closer to God, we have a place. We're going to have a place for them to go because there's no pit so deep that God's grace
you
is not deeper still.
You are my kind of sister.
You know what I mean?
Listen, where is the house going to be?
Henderson, Texas.
Okay, Henderson, Texas, which is where you were based when all that foolishness started in
God
your life, right?
God is sending me back to the place.
Beautiful.
Kind of like back to Egypt to deliver, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
And he's blessed me in so many ways. I'm traveling and speaking and doing what God's called me to do. And this is my passion. It's my drive. It's what I live for. It's what I have zeal for. Mm-hmm. Because God is awesome. He can do anything above what you've ever expected to do.
Yeah, that's good. Wonderful.
And of course, I have my book there.
You do have this incredible book. I asked her earlier if in one word she could describe her testimony, what would it be? And that word was
unshackled.
It's unshackled, which is the title, befitting title of this book that she has, A Road to Freedom. Listen, if there are, I was going to say young women, but young or older women in your life, men for that matter, who really are shackled in some area of their life and they need to know what it's like to experience the freedom of God. Listen, this book is one that they need to read and they need to hear Janie's testimony. You can find her online where?
www.janieburkett.com.
Okay, so we're going to put the link to her website below. Also for Teen Challenge, because if you need to get some folks connected with Teen Challenge, we want to make sure that you know that that is available to you. And listen, if you're looking for someone to speak to some young people in your life, or again, some older people for that matter in your life that just need to hear a refreshing testimony of freedom and what to see a picture of what health and wholeness and freedom and transformation in the power of God looks like. You have given that example, and we were so refreshed by everything that you've shared. And I know that folks are going to want to contribute in some way to Janie's House of Hope.
Please.
And participate in that. What's the best way to do that?
www.janieshouseofhope.com, or you can just call me directly, or my dad is the president, and I am the vice, or however you want to call it, we're kind of together.
Yes, we have working together.
Yes, our family has come together, my parents and my sisters and I, and we have come together and said, we're going to reach the lost. We're going to do this together because we walk through the fire together, and we're going to walk out of it together.
Beautiful.
So it's great, and I have a wonderful husband who supports me. God has blessed me with a wonderful man, and so, you know, there's God.
So much to be grateful for,
yes,
right?
Oh, yes, so much to be grateful. I don't even have all the words to say.
I know. And so now you're 30 years old?
I'm 30.
You're only 30 years old. You have lived such a full life.
Yes.
And we are sitting on the edge of our seat to see what God has in store for you in the next 30, 60 years.
So it's exciting.
I'm excited too. I can't wait to see how many times your hair is going to change color.
I know.
I cannot wait to see that. We are so grateful that you joined us.
Thank
Would you guys please help me to say thank you to her?
Thank you so much.
That was great, great, great interview.
Thank you.